back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Do we have a crazy guy decide to come back and confuse me this time? He did not bring a feature film. He brought a short film. And the film is called Vanishing American Dream. And this thing is like a wild trip, a totally different wild trip than his last film. Mike Morelli is back to discuss his short film. And we'll tell you everywhere you can find it at the end. As always, you have to stay tuned. Hey, Mike, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, man. And happy 420 to you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I guess I should be lighting up a big dude, but I probably would forget half of what we're doing and never eating potato chips. So that probably wouldn't work well for either of us, especially if I post in 2 weeks from now and people are like, what is going on? But that's probably a good segue into your film, though.
I know. I was like, if people will be listening to this on 420, but they should definitely know that we are recording this on 420. So. Yeah.
So I'm going to have to ask, after watching Shithead, which people will bring it up because I really enjoyed the film, did you like smoke a bowl while you wrote this?
Vanishing American Dream.
Yeah.
I probably, I mean, most likely, I'm not going to deny it for sure. There wasn't really too much of a script for this film per se. Is it was almost like storyboarded out and the beats were laid out one at a time. And that's kind of how I conceptualized it.
Hold on, let's back up. What do you mean by beats? What, like, explain to a viewer or a listener while they're watching it, what is a beat to you?
Well, the film kind of follows this girl through her day. So I wanted to just pick out the beats with which to highlight. So, okay, it's the morning, it's her on her way to work, and then you have to come up with a transition in between those. So that's kind of where I'm set a lot of. We choreograph the movements really precisely, so one shot would end with the same movement on where the other one began. So, That had to be kind of like thought out really precisely beforehand, before we even got to set. And it was really smooth. We choreographed it, planned all the beats out, and each beat was, you know, a moment in her day and how that would play out on camera. And then, you know, we stitched them all together.
Okay, so let's start just, why Shelby Sloan as the actress? Why as opposed to somebody else? When you met her, you're like, that's it, I found it, or is it just something you two were working on?
Well, Shelby was my girlfriend at the time, and so we kind of had, you know, developed the concept of working together and making a film together, was just sort of collaborating, was just like in the air, and I was a big fan of hers. You know, I thought she was very talented, and she's extremely talented. She's a great singer, but also a phenomenal actress. And we were just like, let's see what we can do. And, you know, I kind of developed the concept and wrote the character with her in mind, knowing I'd be working with her, and she knocked it out of the park.
So when you're thinking of this, I mean, it's animated. I want people to know there's strong animation in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved it as a viewer, but I think it's a film you need to watch like 5 times. Like, I don't think one time you can get everything. I think there's just so much going on with the music changes, the image changes, the color changes, the look of the film. Yeah. At 5 minutes and 23 seconds, it's hard to take this all in. Like, I had to watch it a couple times just to get a general feel of it, because I thought it was too much for me in one shot.
I had a big conversation with Will Driscoll, our who helped me with visual effects on the film, about that, and he kind of warned me about that, where he's like, "There's a line you have to cross, where if you cross that line, you're going to make the viewers sick, and it's just going to be too much. So it's just got to be enough where it's like this constant journey." And I also felt like if things went too slow, it didn't meet the vibe that I was going for of this like constant motion. So I think we struck a good balance. But yeah, it's almost like a little amusement park ride. That's kind of why okay. I positioned it as a VR. Like, it's almost like in like an IMAX film you'd go see, and you know, that's how I intended it, was to be watched with the 3D glasses. So that was in my mind something you would watch, like, and it's almost like an experience, not almost like a narrative experience.
I mean, if I watch this in VR, which I don't have, or obviously I would have, do I actually see it in VR with the different formats and the different levels and the colors?
It would be in stereoscopic 3D. So the jellyfish that are in the film would pop out of the screen, and the stars would have actual depth. They'd appear deep within the screen. So that was always like a moonshot dream of mine, to be able to make a 3D film. Like, I love 3D. I know a lot of people aren't fans of it. It makes them sick, but I love it. I think it's cool when used correctly. And I felt like for this film specifically, it's an undersea adventure. I'm a huge fan of like those undersea documentaries, the IMAX documentaries, the BBC wildlife ones. And a lot of them are in 3D, and they're great. I think James Cameron's done a few, but they're just amazing. Just those are things that really, really work well in that format. And I thought it was just a really good fit for that.
So let's I hate to say this to a filmmaker. I know you're creative, so don't take this the wrong way. This must be hard for people to watch. I mean, if you wanted to see it in a 3D vision, I don't know. I mean, I have a few friends that do VR. Not a lot of us do. Like, I don't personally. So as a filmmaker, do you feel you're segregating a lot of your audience by making this as a 3D viewing experience?
Not so much, because there is a – I have a 2D version. I have – like, it's in both formats. Like, I was able to send it to you, and you were able to watch it and experience the film. It's like one of those things where, like, ideally, if you can watch it like that, that's great. Awesome. But it's not like I know a lot of filmmakers were like, you know, they don't want you to watch something on your phone, and they don't consider that the true experience. Like, I feel like I don't care if you watch it, however you're able to access it, you can watch it. And whatever you get out of it, you get out of it.
Okay, let's go down that rabbit hole for a second. I think you've touched on a very good topic. I'm an old guy. I watch film the traditional way. I like to watch it on my TV. I like to use my computer. But I have kids, and they're almost to their teens. That phone is what they watch their movies on.
Right.
And, I mean, as a filmmaker, I'd love to hear you say, I don't care. And my argument is, as independent filmmaker, wouldn't you want your film to be seen by anybody, by any means they can?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you have to take into account where people's consumption habits today. And that's how people like to consume their content. And they want to watch it on their phone, they want to have instant access to it. They want to have infinite amounts of content. I would certainly prefer, if you're going to watch my film, you watch it on a 5,000 foot screen with Dolby 700 vision that like melts your balls off. But like, you know, if you don't have that, I'm not going to say like you didn't see it. So the experience is subjective. It's all what you're able to have access to. And I think especially with filmmaking, all those things just add to the experience, but it doesn't take away something. If you're able to watch a film on your phone and it moves you and touches you in some way, that's just as profound if you watched it in a theater. There's no difference there to me.
But I think your film works perfectly for the generation, like that teen generation. It's 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, they could show it to their friends. It could get passed around. I mean, I wouldn't be passing around Shithead. You know what I mean? I think that's a very distinct audience that's after this film. But I think this film's a lot more all access to everybody that's interested in this. I mean, you can send it to numerous film festivals. You can go ahead of a short thing. I mean, you have options here, is I guess what I'm trying to say. Now, did you think of that when you were making a film, or that doesn't come in form? This is your idea. This is what you want to put out there. You're not worried about what access you're going to have later for the film.
No, I'm really, especially for this in particular, this was very much formed by the technology with which it took to produce these images. So you couldn't possibly do a film like this that's very long, because it takes 20 hours to process 1 minute of footage with the way we've filmed this. We used volumetric video, which is sort of like a hologram. And it's this really cool, super new technology, but really, if you're going to do a narrative short with it, you really only could do like 3-4 minutes, because anything longer, you're going to need a render farm that's going to be insanely expensive. So, I had access to some facilities to render this film and get it done a little quicker. But like, even that, still, it still took a long, very long time.
Okay. Now, the colors, did you pick each and every color, or did somebody work with you to do that?
Oh, I did that. I also do color grading. I'm a DaVinci colorist. So I do all my own color, and the process with which how I got the color down to the way it was is pretty interesting. Because I did the film in Cinema 4D, I exported it out of Cinema 4D in like high resolution TIFF images that I then took into DaVinci Resolve. And from there I color graded it, and I had like, I think they were like 32-bit images, I believe. So I had like the full tons of information there with which to work with. So I really, really pushed the colors and pushed the saturation. So every color you see there, yeah, I tweaked that a lot specifically to be exactly the way it is. And I'm happy with how it turned out. I think one of the things that also gets the color the way it is because within Cinema 4D, you essentially have fake lights. You have digital lights in CG. So you do the 3-point lighting setup, you have your key and your fill, and then you some of the lights also were colored as well. So okay. The colors were there within the original renders with which to work with.
Okay. Now I want to focus on something I don't usually ask about, but costume design. I think you had a very distinct style for each generation of the character that we're going to see about the day. Were you consciously thinking of costume design, or were these all Shelby's choices?
There's a combination of me and Shelby's choices. She brought a lot to that role. I mean, I'm pretty sure I kind of just gave her an idea of what I was looking for, and she helped me put together the costume. And I know we went out and it's been a while since we shot it now, but I know we went out and picked out some costumes and put them together and everything like that. Because really, I wanted to, she doesn't speak in the film, so I wanted to try and establish her character with her, like her emotional state with her costume and her, her expressions on her face. So, especially with the waitress outfit she had, I tried to like intentionally have that comment on where she was at that point in the day.
Now, your film is called Vanishing of the American Dream. Does the American Dream start as soon as you wake up every day, or does it not start there? I mean, the film kind of tells me it does, but I'm asking your personal opinion now.
Well, I think it's an overall, it's an overall expression with where we are in our daily lives, because especially with you look at what the American dream is and this concept of what we're promised as children to grow up and we'll all be rock stars and we'll be, you know, we're all going to be the Rock and have, giant muscles and 12-inch dicks and have, you know, millions of dollars and things like that. And then, you know, you have to work a day job and you have to go to work and the reality sets in and things are different. And, so it's sort of a state of mind where she's at, where we're all at with our lives, you know, the fulfillment of your work and your day and going through the motions. So I think there's something to be said for having a, you know, the rhythm of life kind of like beating your dream out of you.
So, okay. So at the end of the film, the dream is beaten out of her. Is that what I'm supposed to assume? I just figured it left, and then the next day it starts over.
Oh well, it's meant to be, like a cycle. Like it starts and the ending starts where the beginning is.
Yeah.
So it's like a circle. But no, that was more just out of practical reasons. You know, you wake up when you wake up and you go to sleep when you go to sleep. So it's, and it's also, the film's very dreamlike as well. So it's like, Is the film a dream or is it, was she really experiencing this? It's treading that line a little bit. No, that was more just out of practical reasons. Like, wouldn't it be cool? That's where it ended in the same spot where it started.
I felt it had an old television feel, like I'm saying 1950s feel, Honeymooners, maybe a little bit of early I Love Lucy. Were you looking at that, or that's just what you went with, the style based on costume design?
I can see that. No, that's probably, but I could see that subconsciously maybe seeping into your thoughts because the models for the televisions that I used were all, I think they're old TV sets as well.
They were, yes. So,
yeah, they're like older. You know, I went through so many models of televisions to find the right kind of look for that. I think that's more coincidental, I would say, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the posing of Shelby for each shot, how does that work? Can you walk me through the exact process of the shooting? Do you shoot it like a normal film or is it shot differently?
No. So this is a film that was shot using volumetric video. So that it's super cool technique. And I think give the industry 10, 20 years from now, you're going to see this stuff really commonplace. It's super new where we take like 60 cameras and you scan an actor in, and you get them from every single angle, from head to toe. And then you turn that actor into what's essentially a hologram, and their body becomes a 3D model, and their skin is like a video. It's really, really, it's almost like filming a play. Because you don't have to worry about where the camera is placed. When in a normal film, you play to the camera and things are staged for the camera. Everything is fake, even a close-up. One actor will adjust forward, one actor will adjust here, one guy's on stilts. This is totally different. You play like to a wide shot, and then in post-production, we'll figure out where the camera is from there. But the thing is with that, because you're catching it from every angle, you can't cheat also. So, not to get into it, there's a huge – it's one of the new developments we're coming with is ways to actually manipulate the arms and the legs. But that wasn't available to me yet. So, your movements had to be pretty precise. And I give Shelby a ton of credit because she's also a dancer and she, like, choreographed the moves. So, you know, her one hand was here and, you know, the next shot started right there. And that was all very well thought out to be, you know, put together and edited the way it was.
This may be I do need more technical questions. I'm sorry, just because everybody can understand. So how long a normal shooting day, let's say it's 12 hours to 16 hours, depending on what you're shooting. Now, when you're shooting this, how long are your days?
It's interesting because considering all the shit I went through as shithead, this was such an easy shoot. Everything went perfectly. The shoot was just a couple hours. I think we did, we went back and did a reshoot day, and that was just like an hour or two. Because, like I said, you don't need to move the camera. So you just power on the system. Once the system is working, and Shelby had already rehearsed her poses, she pretty much had to just step into, basically it's a circle, and then we used to call it the bubble. So anything that's in that bubble is going to be captured and become a hologram. So literally, if Shelby could just rehearse her movements while I'm getting the camera ready, I could then go and, you know, just hit record, and she just walks in, and bam, she's got it down. And she was great. I mean, I'm pretty sure we did, like, just two, three takes on each one to get it down.
So how long does it take? You said it took 20 hours to do 1 minute of footage.
That's to process it through with the computer.
Okay, so that's 100 hours in total to make the film then, roughly.
I don't know. I can't give you an exact answer, but it was a lot. Yeah, it was a lot. To render the final print actually took 2 full months of rendering. I'm not even joking. Like, literally, I hit render in May, and it was done in July.
So you got to leave your computer on for 2 months?
Yep. Yep. It was like, I was like, I felt like I was on a boat at sea. I had all these fans on it, and I would like go and check on it. It was all loud, and I would go and like hit it with a hammer every once in a while to make sure it was still working. But yeah, literally 2 months nonstop. I don't think I turned it off maybe once for the entire time.
Like, are you worried there's not a power failure going to happen that week? Like, you must be panicking.
I'm terrified. No. That's why I said, I'm like, fingers crossed. Like, it's amazing I didn't start a fire or, like, burn down my house or whatever, because I'm running so much power and my computer is just chugging. It's hot, you know, especially in L.A. when hit July. Huh. Luckily, everything rendered fine. The computer didn't explode. It's like I said, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. You know, because when I was rendering Shithead, conversely, which I had insane amounts of issues left and right, you know, everything went wrong that could go wrong, and render glitches and things like that. But no, I mean, just the only thing was the time. And the good thing was, is, you know, it's just, it gives you a reason to step away from the film and step back to it. So come back later and the movie's done.
Is there a film festival for this kind of stuff that just does this kind of films? That's the only thing they accept?
We just were in Cinequest, which was a VR film fest, and we won most creative VR film. There's a few more virtual reality film fests, but I feel like this film kind of treads the line because I have to kind of explain it every time I've submitted to a film festival that does VR, because it's not interactive. It's literally just a narrative experience that's in 3D. And there aren't really any outlets for 3D content anymore. The 3D boom of like the early 2010s is dead, and they don't even make 3D TVs anymore. So really, the only place for 3D content is the VR space. And so we're in this kind of like gray area where we're not like a game, but we're a movie, but we're not really a movie because we're in 3D. So it's, I don't know. I mean, I feel like Cinequest, they were nice. They gave us an award for that. But other than that, it's kind of like we're in this little gray area of like this in-between medium.
Okay, well, I'm going to move on to the fun questions program. I think I did pretty good for a 5-minute film. I keep you pretty much occupied.
Yeah, right. Longer than the movie. You could have watched the movie at this point and then thought about it and then watched it again.
I don't think I asked you. I know two of these I did not ask you. One I'm not sure about. If I did, I'll change it. So your first question, one film you've never seen and should have?
Oh, that's tough.
Ah, see, I knew I didn't ask you this one.
Yeah, I'm going to say F.W. Murnau's Sunrise, A Story of Two Humans.
I got to tell you, it is amazing. I have seen it, so there you go.
I have not seen it all the way through, but I have really, really, I'm shooting myself in the foot for not watching that one.
There you go. I thought you would catch me on something I haven't seen. Good luck. since your film is very much like a video game, I presume you're a gamer. What's your favorite video game to play?
I am not a gamer, actually. I have gamed in the past, but I used to play. I can still play some Mario Kart.
There you go.
But other than that, you know, now I'm just like, I have a Switch, and I just feel like if I pick up video games now, I'm like, I have too much going on, and like, I don't give a shit about Mario Saves the Goddamn Princess anymore. I just don't fucking care.
We all need an outlet. That's got to do it. You got to use the outlet. Trust me. It even helps us podcasters out to just, I don't want to talk to anybody. That's perfect for me. It doesn't talk back. The last one's really easy. I've never asked anybody this one. Your favorite dessert?
Oh, without a doubt, a chocolate brownie ice cream sundae with hot fudge and whipped cream. No doubt.
That is specific, people. There you go. So if you ever meet him, you're out. You're like, let's get some dessert. He's in. So before we let you go, please tell everybody where they can find this marvelous film.
Well, I actually had to pull it off of the internet like a month or two ago because we got into Cinequest and they wanted to have exclusive access. So if you want to watch it in 3D, it will be. It's on Vimeo right now. You can rent it for like $1, I think. But it'll be back online relatively, you know, as soon as I get around to putting it back up. Cinequest just gave us an award last weekend. So I think we're in the clear to put it back up again. So
promote your website. You have other films. I know you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you haven't seen Shithead, you definitely have to check out Shithead. Shitheadthemovie.com. I got a bunch of music videos coming out for Johnny Raps. We're doing some of the some really, really funny stuff. He's a great rapper. So I directed like, I don't even know how many videos now for him. I think I got 4 coming. So his whole album, his whole next album, just check it out. If you like Shithead and all that kind of stuff, you're definitely going to like his music. So keep that in mind.
Thank you for your time and have a great night.
Thanks, man. You too.